This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
All right, here we go. It's a new week. Overdrive is off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, up on TSN for Brian Hayes, Frankie Corrado, Dave Feshchuk of the Toronto Star. I'm back. I was off on Friday, although it felt like I was grinding. I was at Wonderland with the kids.
What
on
a grind.
Friday. No. Felt like 55 degrees. That is an experience.
Did you get the mist machine at least?
Yeah, I did not witness the mist machine. I was hanging around, you know, the little waterfall there? Well, it's not a little one. I mean, it's like it pops the second you walk into the gate. It's basically the whole landscape of the park. We were trying to hang around there. That's desperate. When you're fighting for inches as close to the gate as possible so you can get some shrapnel from divers jumping in,
oh yeah,
that's when you know you're struggling.
Oh yeah.
But that was us on Friday.
You couldn't even get into the water park, could you? Didn't they have a fire recently?
They have had issues. Yeah, they have had issues.
That's a weird one, eh? Like, how does the water slide just catch fire? Like, is that?
I'm not sure.
I don't know how that
happens. I don't know. But that's, we weren't doing that anyway because with kids going to Splash Zone or whatever the hell it's called, that is not something we were interested in trying. Because once they get in there, you're never getting them back out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It is quite the experience. And so I don't know if I'm refreshed or not, but I'm back. Right? It's good to be back.
Are you hop on the rides with the kids, Dad? Or are they too small for that yet? Where are you on that?
Yes. I've got 3 and 6, right? So my oldest had, I want to say, an orange armband. They've got a system based on heights. And it was available to her to go on a lot of different rides. So we went on a number of rides. We went on one called the Fly, which was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And it's for adults. Like, adults will line up. And that kind of spooked her, and that was kind of the end of the road. But, yes, there are a lot. We're in Kidsville the whole time, basically. And that's the thing about going to Wonderland is there really are 3 separate parks. You get the water park, then you've got where the kids hang out, then where you've got teenagers and adults. And, you know, they have so many crazy rides there.
Let me ask you this one. Did you, since you're in that kids section, I remember this one as a kid, like, do you go on those teacups that kind of just spin around and you can get the vomit going very early on in that?
I avoided that because I know what's coming. I can't do it. And if you're on there, because your kids have the power to spin it as much as they want to spin it.
Right.
Right? And my kids, you could spin them around for days and they wouldn't get, like,
dude, that's the vomitarium. They might as well call it the vomitarium.
It's awful. It's disgusting to look at, really. Yeah, whoever created that ride is really an awful person. Let's
terrible.
Be honest. So, and I avoided that one, but to answer your question, Dave, I was on a lot of the kids' rides. I should send a picture. I think it's Rob working on the TV side today. I'll send you a picture. It was the last ride we went on. I almost threw my back out. I'm tall, right? So trying to get into these small rides is not easy, and I just look like an idiot. I'm sure some people are probably like, there's the guy from TSN. Look how stupid he looks. But, you know, hey, listen, I'm with my kids. What do you want out of me? But I was there on my own on those rides. Because there are signs on some of the kids' rides that say if you're a certain height, basically you can't come on unless you have kids. Who on earth is like 6 feet plus wanting to go on, you know, the pumpkin patch ride?
It's the same guy.
Why is that necessary?
It's the same guy lined up at 8:30 in the morning for a bobblehead outside the Rogers Center. That's who it is.
Possibly right. I'm guessing the signage is there because they've actually had to tell grown men, like, you can't come on the ride.
Right.
You know, this is for kids. The bat's over there, you know, go on a different ride that is more appropriate for your age.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was wild sea, man. It was hot. Yeah. But you can't complain. If you choose to go to Wonderland and it's hot, you made the decision, right? Now you can't walk around there complaining about the heat. So anyway, that was a wild one on Friday, and we got a lot to get into today. Yeah. Like the Jays, how about the Jays in Baltimore tonight? They have 15 games left against the Orioles. 15.
Crazy. Yeah.
They have what, 58 games left on the season? They've got 15 left against Baltimore. Baltimore's 2 games behind them.
Yeah, they're playing great. They're the hottest team. One of the hottest teams. They're hotter than the Yankees, hotter than the Jays. Like, they're And they didn't really – they didn't add anyone at the deadline. They kind of subtracted.
Right. Five games behind them. Two back of Tampa, I should say. So the Jays do have a rather significant lead on them right now. But over the course of 15 games, things can change pretty quickly. Right? So you got to take care of business, man. This Baltimore team, they are pesky. They are young. They've got no payroll whatsoever. They're not a household name. Yet they're playing well. And the Jays are going to have to put up with them a lot. Well,
that's just it. Like, there was a time when – probably, you know, beginning of the season, if you were to say, you know, past the All-Star break, you got 15 games left against the Orioles, more than a quarter of your remaining schedule, as you point out, Brian, you know, you'd say, we'll take that all day. Like, these are like guaranteed wins.
You're
nights.
Thinking, what, 10 to 12 wins in those 15 games, for sure.
Exactly. And now you're saying, man, you can't take these guys lightly because they're not to be taken lightly, and they're proving that.
Yeah.
No, that's the truth, man. And, like, Springer on the IL. Obviously, Mesa on the IL. It sounds like Mesa will return by the end of the year. But they do not have any lefties in the bullpen right now. Like, Mesa was their only guy. You know, they do not have a left-handed arm available to them out of the bullpen. And hopefully Mesa will, again, return and return to form. But the Springer story keeps coming up, man. Like, he's on the IL. Our understanding is they're being very quiet in terms of what's going on. I would have to believe they're nervous. Like, you know, we were talking last week, can we get him back to 80%? Can they get him to 90%? What if he can't play? Like, the more this goes on, the more I'm concerned Springer is not going to be an option. And if that's the case, that is a major hit to your lineup.
Isn't it weird how they've been very quiet as far as a working diagnosis goes?
Right.
Like,
IL, inflammation,
elbow inflammation.
That's it. That's so vague. Yeah, it could turn into a longer IL stint. That's kind of where I'm thinking it goes,
and that's concerning, man.
And it sounds like, look, they have said a few things. They've talked about how he's going to have to gut this out. This is about pain tolerance. You talk to the amateur and the professional injury experts on Twitter, none of whom have examined this guy, and you get speculation about, is it bone chips? Is it, you know, is it some kind of, you know, could be, you know, is it impending Tommy John? Obviously, who knows? There's a lot of bad things that can go wrong with an elbow when you're a ball player, clearly. But what we did see, guys, was the wince, you know, in one of his most recent moments where it was obvious that that right elbow was in pain, and that didn't look good. And it makes you wonder, like, are they going to have to kind of nurse him toward the finish line of the regular season?
100%.
And then just inject it, like basically inject it with painkillers for him to play in the playoffs.
Yeah. It's like a Kirk Gibson moment, basically, from playoff time, without the season Gibson had that year.
At least he's getting injected with something here in North America. When I was in the KHL last year, I had a hip injury. And the doctor comes to me and he goes, listen, you gotta take something, right? It's either going to be a pill or an injection. I looked at this Russian doctor. I said, you're not coming anywhere near me with a needle, okay? Just give me the pill.
Right.
And I took my chances.
What's the pill, though? That's what I'd love to know.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It was some kind of, like, anti-inflammatory thing. And I asked one of the, like, the Latvian guys. I'm like, hey, what is this? He goes, no, it's good. It's good for you. And, like, that was part of, like, you would mix that in with the regular pills that you'd get before the game, which is, they say it's like electrolytes and these kinds of things. And I think one time I looked at the guy who does them, like the trainer. I'm like, hey, what's in these things? He goes, take it. It's good for you. You need it.
Didn't your radar go off when you're asking a teammate what's up with this pill?
Is it good?
Wasn't that concerning? That's like us having engineering issues, and I'm like, Feschuk, what do you think's wrong with the board?
Right now?
Exactly.
Like, why would he know? Yeah. And why would your teammate know what kind of pills you're taking?
It was Yaroslavl Lokomotiv. It was game one. Game one of the season. He comes up to me, goes, you want a pill or an injection? I said, there's no chance you're coming near me with a needle on game one of the regular season.
This is fascinating to me. Yeah. Take me through the diagnosis. Obviously, something flared up during camp.
Yeah, so we did a 7-week camp. So I got there July 5th, and the regular season didn't start until, you know, September 2nd, September 4th, something like that. So we went away for 3 weeks. We did two-a-days. Essentially, it was like a workout in the morning with the heart rate monitors on. And in this whole, like, track and field facility, they have projection screens with all our heart rates. So if you're doing a bike sprint or running or whatever, and you're not in the red zone, which is like 180 beats per minute or higher, yelling at you. like yelling at you to get it up there. So we're doing that for 2 hours. We get a break. We come back to the rink. We do a skate. We do another workout. This goes on for 3 weeks. Wow. Then we go back to Riga, and it just turns into the one workout, one skate a day. But then we're traveling around. We're going to Finland. We're going to all these places. We're playing these exhibition games. We're getting like a day off every 2 weeks. So we go to Finland, and then something goes in my hip. I'm like, oh, that's not good. Just try to, like, gut it out, whatever, like, you know, deal with it. And as we get to the regular season, I told him, like, listen, like, something's going on in my hip. Like, they go, no, like, game one's coming up. Like, Your hip is fine.
As far as we're concerned, it's fine.
Exactly.
Game one is next week. You don't worry about that. So
we got a pill for that, Frankie.
We'll take care of you.
So we fly into Yaroslavl, and I'm like, I don't feel good. Like, I'm really, like, if you ever saw someone mail it in during morning skate, that was the day. And, doctor at night, he's like, hey, you want a pill or an injection? I'm like, man, I can't do an injection today. Like,
no.
You just got...
That's
what
not
was
what
it? Did you ask him what was in the needle?
I don't even know if I asked them or whatever. It was just like, I was just like, it's not even happening.
Is there
like,
a translator involved here, or is this?
He spoke English. Yeah. He was, you know what, the doc actually, he was a good guy and he tried really hard. I think it more comes from like the upper management guys where it's like, no, this guy's an import. We brought him in. He's playing and you're making sure he plays, you know?
Right.
So he's doing his best. His hands are tied.
Right. He's a middleman. He's being paid by the team, and the team's telling you we need this guy playing.
Yeah.
But Frankie, sorry, Brian. But at what point, Frankie, like, I'm like, on a more serious note, like, at what point do you sort of get, you know, some secondary advice, or do you get your agent on the phone and say, hey, I got to figure out what these guys are doing to me?
Yeah. So seven games into the season, we were in Moscow playing a game, and my hip was killing me so bad. And I think I texted my wife. I'm like, I'm pretty sure this could be it for a little while here. And halfway through the game, it just like basically crapped out on me. And I just, you know, went to the dressing room. I said, got to do like some MRIs, all that kind of stuff. And ended up coming home to like get all that stuff done with the intentions of going back and playing. And then I got home. My doctor was like, yeah, I don't know if you're gonna be back there in two, 3 weeks. Like you're probably gonna need a little longer than that. So I was trying, and then finally just got to the point where I called the team and I was like, I think I'm gonna have to just stay here. Like, let's just terminate the deal. And but I mean, listen, for George Springer, at least he doesn't have to deal with that. At least he'll know what's being offered to him.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's not needle or pills as the only two options for George. Let's hope it's not Tommy John at some point.
Yeah.
But you know, if it comes to be. But you know, Springer's such a catalyst for this lineup, you know, mm-hmm. offensively, defensively, in terms of a leadership role in the clubhouse, which, you know, brings into focus the Whit Merrifield deal, you know, that much more, who obviously played a very prominent role yesterday. And we'll get into this play at the plate extensively. I think it's being overlooked that him tagging from second to third on the Espinal flyout
last night,
where he just made it into third, like just barely. And this guy's got wheels, and Schneider's utilizing him, man. Like, Schneider is managing a lot more aggressively. When that ball went to left, it was like you could see he was tagging. He had the green light, and he was going.
We've been seeing a lot of hit and run, though.
A lot more.
As soon as Schneider took over, anytime Espinal was at the dish, it was like hit and run situations. And so, like, this Merrifield fits right in with that kind of aggressive style of play.
Now, he's a downgrade on a healthy Springer.
Right.
Like, ideally, you want Merrifield as a guy who's you know, spot duty around the diamond, is going to he's going to hit further down your lineup, even though he is, you know, a leadoff hitter. He's been a leadoff hitter in Kansas City throughout his career. He's very familiar with the role, but he is not the equivalent of a healthy Springer.
No.
But it could be a big get, you know, in retrospect, if Springer is not a guy that's going to be available for you, and he is going to be able to fill in possibly at the top of the order and play some center field. You know, the play at the plate last night, I think, is a classic example of what I rant and rave about and have been raving about forever.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, yeah.
It's a perfect example of sports allowing technology to steal a moment, because that's what it was last night. That is exactly what you want. That's the definition of sports entertainment right there. That's the beauty of baseball, a play at the plate. there is not enough plays at the plate anymore, because all it is you either strike out or hit a home run, you know, in large part. Most guys crossing the plate, they're jogging across it because it's a home run. This is my youth coming to life. I think I can speak for you as well, Dave. You as well, Frankie. Plays at the plate, and it was an incredible play at the plate. It was in the 10th inning. It's in their park. The place is going nuts. And what happens? John Schneider runs out and goes, we're going to have to review it. Pause the world for us.
Yep.
They go and review it. They come back. They steal the moment from the Twins. Benefits the Jays greatly. I think by the letter of the law, it was called appropriately, because Sanchez was on the line when the ball was coming in. Now, it's coming in from left.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it would have been a closed case, don't even review. If that ball is being thrown from center or right, clearly he's off, you know, line in terms of preparing to block the plate. But it's coming from left field. So, you know, you can make a decision on whether or not he should be there or not. At some point, he had to be there. But technically, he was there before the ball got there. That is really fine print. I don't need it. I don't want it in baseball. You know, there's something about the protection of catchers, protection of goalies, protection of quarterbacks. Like, that's what this is about. It goes back to the Buster Posey gruesome injury where baseball said we got to change things. But what a moment to be stolen. Like, even if you're a Blue Jay fan, I get it. It benefited you greatly. They reviewed it. You end up scoring the winning run. You hold on in the 10th. You get a W. You're out of there. But what a moment as a fan. It's a play at the plate. It's bang, bang, bang. And then you got to stop and review it.
Like, that's beautifully executed. That's so well executed.
And Merrifield took off. That's the guy you want. Like, it's not like it was Vladdy trying to get in.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's a guy with wheels. It's the definition of a play at the plate that is stolen because of technology. And it drives me crazy. And it did yesterday again.
Yeah, no. Well, at least Hayes, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. It was probably called correctly. I think you know, the Twins could make the case that he left a lane there, that there was access to the plate. Merrifield chose not to take it and went right to a different part of the plate where the catcher obviously was obscuring it. But if he didn't get the moment, Hayes, at least you got the classic manager freakout that we don't see very
often. Which I love.
And Rocco Baldelli, you know, put on quite the performance after that video review.
That was a single A promotion night, I'm going to get tossed because we have 1,500 people here type of moment for Baldelli. We have a comment from him actually in the post game, because he was still steaming after the game. And, like, he should point out, he knows they still had three outs where they could have capitalized and still won that game.
Right.
You know, like, yes, it went against you. I understand why he's so heated, but you still had a chance to come back and win. They didn't. But what Baldelli said after the game makes zero sense to me. This is how he described what he believed happened with the umps and the call out of New York last night.
For someone to step in that situation and ultimately make a decision that was blocking the plate, that's beyond embarrassing for our game, for all the players out there on both sides of the field working their ass off. For the entire game, it's completely unacceptable. I can't even believe I'm sitting here talking to you guys about this right now. It's one of the worst moments I think we've seen of umpiring in any game I've ever been a part of in baseball. And I think it was pathetic what just played out.
Okay, so that is harsh. That probably is getting Rocco fined, I would think. I mean, that is harsh. Now, he also, I want to play another clip. Do we have the other clip, Nick? The chicken blank clip? Bleep, that's the one I'm looking for here. All right, that's the one I want to play, because I vehemently disagree. Do we have it, Nick, or not? No? Okay, we don't have it. Anyway, he called the play, the umpire coming back and reversing it, chicken crap. You know, which to me is the complete opposite. They went inside the Twins park and reversed a call that went against the home team. That takes stones.
Yeah, that actually
takes courage.
Yeah.
The easy way out would have been, hey, I'm not calling this thing back.
Yeah.
No way, man. Just who cares? They're out. They're out of the inning. Sanchez, you're a hero. See you later. It actually takes courage to step in front of that crowd with Rocco Baldelli freaking the way he's freaking, and reverse the call.
But can
and stand by your conviction.
Can I ask you something? Doesn't that review come from New York? That's not.
Yes,
coming.
It does.
That's
yeah,
so,
it's New York.
So to say that it's the umpire, I get what he's saying. I get what he's saying, that it's ridiculous that they would overturn it. And, you know, he calls it a, I don't know the word he used about the umpiring, but it's the league office. It's not the umpire called it the way you wanted it called on the field, but it got overturned by the MLB office.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you can make a case that if you're mad about anything, maybe you're mad that the league office in New York undermined the umpire on the field on a call that you can argue was 50-50, gray area. And why would you undermine a guy on a gray area call? It's very difficult to make in the moment. And he took a stand on it. And you can still argue looking at the video 100 times. You get 50 different umpires in the room. You're probably going to have 25 on either side saying, I'd call that out. I'd call that safe.
Every time you watch it. Every time you watch it, you think, oh, he could have slid outside of Sanchez's leg. Oh, but he was blocking it a little bit. Like, every time I watch it, I'm undecided as to what the right call is. I understand the spirit of the rule, though.
Another reason why, again, I rant and rave. I hate it because of exactly what you guys just said. It's the same thing with goaltender interference. 50% of the time, they get it right. 50% of the time, they still get it wrong. But it's always going to be subjective anyway.
That's what it is.
You're always going to review it and then come back and say, well, this is kind of how we saw it. But if this guy moved his foot, and it's like, what's the point? You know, you're just wasting time, and you're still going to piss off half the people.
Yeah.
So you're right.
What do you think you're accomplishing? Because what you hear is, and I get into it with Phillips all the time, and Steve is on, is, well, I want it right. Well, Rocco Baldelli doesn't think they got it right.
No, exactly.
So, of course, John Schneider thinks he got it right, but the GM in Mini doesn't. So the idea that it's just, well, I want to get it right. Yeah, no, you want to get it right if it benefits you. That's when you want to get it right. But you're not going to see it that way all the time.
And that's the problem. Like, to have video review on subjective calls, to me, is wrong. Because, you know, goaltender interference is a great example, Brian. Now, I understand. You know, did the puck go over the goal line? Yeah, okay, video review that. Did this player touch the bag before the ball got there? Video review that. That's not subjective. There's no opinion. On this particular call, there's a lot of opinion. There's gray area. There are no lines drawn there that you can just say, well, his foot's over that line, therefore he was blocking the plate. So I think this is just ridiculous, and I'm with you. Like, this is a human element play.
Yes, it is.
You got to go with the call on the field on a play like that.
The only issue with the goalie interference stuff is that every once in a while there's going to be a massive blown call where the goalie was clearly interfered with, but somehow both referees didn't see it, and it stands as a goal. And then that's when you get the conversations of, well, this is something we need to review. Like, if we didn't get the egregious ones, I agree with you. Like, subjective things like that don't necessarily need to be reviewed. The problem is, over the years, at least once a year, we're getting one egregious one where people are like, how can we not, like, how can we move forward with this and not review it because it was just so bad?
That is true, but think about that. Think about that. You have to change, or we have to collectively change as a sports world, the whole landscape because of one play we can't stomach, one mistake, you know, like it was, that's the whole offside thing. Matt Duchene. Yes, he was 3 feet offside. So what? It happened once. I don't want to spend the rest of my life waiting for blue line reviews, you know, on the fifth game of the season on a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're right, Frankie. And that's what happens is the GMs get together. Hey, remember when this happened, we better do this. Just, okay, there was a big mistake. So be it. It's going to happen a couple times a year.
We also have more voices, right? We have more voices than we ever did. We have Twitter. We have way more, you know, online publications, print publications. Like, there's just way more voices and outlets for people to voice their displeasure with things like that when they happen.
And it's just not good for business. You know, like, again, like, you need to be promoting a play at the plate. And what's everyone going to be talking about? A review at the plate.
Yeah.
That's not good for business.
It's not good for business, and it's been taken too far. And you know, the point that I keep making, and because when I talk to the officials that I know well, and you know, you get to know officials over the years. You're in Marriott lobby bars with them over the years, and you get to know guys. And the point a lot of them make, and they can't make it on the record because it's their livelihood. They're not supposed to talk about this stuff. Is that, hey, guess what? Players make mistakes too, and you know they don't like. You know, Alex Kerfoot makes a dumb drop pass that costs the Leafs a goal. It's not like Alex Kerfoot, like, people are calling for him to be banned from the game.
That's very true, Dave.
So their point is, like, we make dumb mistakes and we miss calls.
Yep.
But, you know, the players make them too. That's to Hayes's great phrase. It's the human element.
Yep.
And we need it in sports.
That's the thing. And, like, as a player, I've made a million mistakes. And I actually came across a video recently At some point during the show, we got to play it where a certain TSN analyst absolutely roasts me in a pregame show. At some point, we got to get to this.
Okay, we have access to that? Yes, we will play that. All right, I'm looking forward to seeing that. That'll be the equivalent of the needle. Right, that's not the pill. You're talking about that's a substantial carved.
This is someone I thought was my friend. Let's just put it that way.
All right, there's a tease. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. Nathan Rourke is going to join us. The story of the Canadian sports scene right now, really. I mean, not only the Canadian Football League. Guy throws for 5 touchdowns, runs for another one over the weekend. His stats are off the charts.
Incredible.
Off the charts. And the Lions are in a great spot out west. So Nathan Rourke will join us. He's a good Oakville boy. He's coming up in the 6 p.m. hour. And Colton Ost will join us. Tom Kim, 20 years old, wins at Wyndham this past weekend. A guy just got over here. He just got a special exemption to join the tour. And then he starts with a quad on Thursday and ends up winning the tournament. What a scene. So we'll get into that and more coming up with Colt. We got Steve Phillips on the Jays in Baltimore tonight. Frankie Corrado's in here. Dave Feschuk of the Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Steve Phillips a little bit later this afternoon. Jays in Baltimore tonight. Start of a 3-game series. They're coming off a split in Minnesota. You got Kikuchi on the mound tonight. Then Manoah, then Barrios. Barrios got lit up again on Friday night. That was ugly, man. Ugly. So we'll get into that with Steve a little bit later on. Big Kevin Durant news dump a little bit earlier this afternoon. We're going to touch on Bruins finding money for great players. We'll touch on that as well. But we're into the FedEx now. It is playoff time in the PGA Tour. And Tom Kim has thrown his name into the ring.
Tom Kim, baby.
Tom Kim, 20 years old. He just got an exemption to come over here and play these final events. He just got his tour card, I believe, last week. Like, it locked it in for next year. And what does he do this week? He goes out there and puts on an absolute clinic at the Wyndham. And to chat about that, we're joined now by former PGA Pro, CBS golf commentator, and you can check out his podcast as well. Here is Colt Nost. What's up, Colt?
How we doing, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're doing well. Thank you for joining us. So Tom Kim starts with a quad on the first hole of the tournament and then comes back and ends up winning it. If you put yourself in his shoes, if you take a quad on the first hole of the championship, how does the rest of your tournament play out?
Probably not going to last very long. I'd have probably been on my phone on the second tee looking at fights for that afternoon, if I'm being totally honest. I mean, he's definitely a lot stronger mentally than I am, and probably a lot of guys out there to come back. And I mean, he won by 5 shots after making a quad on the first. Just incredible golf. But tip your cap to him, man. That's pretty cool just to, you know, be able to laugh it off and go out there and play great golf after that.
So, Colt, big moment in the broadcast booth at the Wyndham with Nick Faldo signing off as the lead golf analyst in the sport, really. What did you make of his sign-off? Got quite emotional. And what kind of void will that leave to your mind?
Yeah, you know, I've been with the CBS team. This was my first full season. And Nick let us know earlier this year about this this decision and that what was coming. And, you know, it was tough. I've gotten close with Nick over the last year and a half, and I love him on the air. Him and I have great banter going back and forth. I think a lot of people think we don't like each other because it's normally just making jokes at each other, but it's totally the opposite. It's great. I think it makes the broadcast fun. But listen, like they said yesterday, I mean, to do what he's done, be the number one player in the world on the golf course and then step in the booth and be one of, if not the best, to ever do it is a hell of an accomplishment. And you know, I wish he was sticking around for a little longer. But listen, like he said, he's been traveling nonstop. He's 65 years old, and he's ready to go hang out at his Faldo farm. But it was emotional. I got my schedule at the start of the year and saw that this one wasn't on it, which was fine with me because I was playing a member guest golf tournament. That was a lot of fun. But once I found out that this was going to be his last, I really wish I could have been there because it was a really cool moment. It was emotional. And that's how it should have been, though. I mean, this is a big deal. He's leaving his home for 16 years, and like they said, we're a family out there. We spend so much time together. So I wasn't one bit surprised that everyone got emotional.
How big of an impact did Nick Faldo have on you know, the CBS crew and all its members? And, you know, how much was there to learn from him?
It's great. I mean, like, look, he's sitting in that lead analyst chair, right? And a lot of people always question the lead analyst. Like, oh, you haven't been there. You haven't done this. You don't know what it's like. Well, you can't say that to Nick Faldo. number one player in the world, six major championships, won a gazillion times around the world. And I think he's funnier. He's very smart. There's no doubt about that. And he loves the game. And I think that comes out in his broadcasts. And, I mean, like I said, when I joined the team, I think we saw a little different side of Nick where he was able to poke fun at me. I poked it back, and I got him going a little bit and got his attention going. And we had so much fun. That's one thing I think, you know, we always talk about athletes leaving the sport and they miss the locker room, they miss the plane rides and all that. That's one thing I think he will miss is just hanging out, you know, before and after the show with everyone and just sharing laughs. It's so much fun. But listen, he's been doing this for so long. If he's happy, I'm happy. I just wish him nothing but the best.
With Colt Nost of CBS, Subpar Podcast. So, you know, Faldo hangs him up, and again, he goes out watching a 20-year-old put on an incredible display. Shoots 27 on the front yesterday, runs away with the tournament. And we've heard about this kid for a while. You know, the PGA Tour clearly wanted him. They got him. But with everything that just took place, could this be blank check from Greg Norman territory? Like, how does Norman approach Kim now moving forward?
That's going to be interesting. You know, if you listen to Tom Kim talk about how it's been his lifelong dream to play on the PGA Tour, now he's got that opportunity. You know, he earned enough points to get his card, and now he's won, so he's in the FedEx Cup playoffs, which is a huge deal. He's 34. He could make it all the way to Eastlake to the Tour Championship. He's going to be in all the majors next year because of his world ranking. But the kid's a special talent. I hope that's not the case. I hope he stays on the PGA Tour. He seems like he's got a great personality. His interview with Amanda Renner yesterday was great after he won. I'm a big fan of him. I definitely hope he stays on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just a huge get, I think, for the Tour. Like, if you get this kid and he's the next one, and who knows? I mean, you don't want to label some guy and start, you know, projecting how many majors he could win or what he's going to be like in 10 or 15 years. But to start, like, this young, this early, I mean, what kind of competitions do you think he could push, you know, forward with next year? In other words, if he shows up at the majors, could we talk about him at 21 doing what Spieth did, doing maybe not what Tiger did, but could he win a major next year potentially based on how good his game is?
You know, I think there's no doubt his game is world-class and he can win. It's going to be tough at major championships going against the best of the best. I mean, the Wyndham field was a nice field, but it wasn't a major championship field by any means. The one thing that concerns me for him just a little bit is his distance. I mean, if you looked like at his ball speed yesterday, you know, he's anywhere from 160 to 165, which is definitely towards the bottom of the PGA Tour. And at these major championships, distance is just so huge. And we see these guys overpower golf courses. But you never know. I mean, the way he putts it, the way his irons are, those are elite clubs in his bag. It's just the driver concerns me a little bit. Can he do it 4 days in a row on a big ballpark like Augusta National? We'll have to wait and see. But his iron game is incredible, and the way he putted this week, that was something special to watch.
It certainly was, Colt. Obviously, off the golf course and now to the courtroom, I'm wondering, we're not going to get into the legalese of the antitrust suit that a bunch of LIV Tour players have filed against the PGA Tour, but from your perspective as a former player, you know, what do you make of this suit, and what's the buzz around where it might take this battle between these two rival factions?
I mean, just to be blunt, it sucks. I hate it. You know, we should be focused on the FedEx Cup playoffs right now and the members that were loyal to the PGA Tour and are getting ready to try to win that prestigious title. And then you got some guys that chose to leave. They knew it was going to happen. And now they're challenging it, which is just so unfortunate because, like I said, we shouldn't be having to talk about this. We should be focused on the PGA Tour, the playoffs, how someone's going to win a pile of cash at the end, which is going to be awesome, and you're going to be the best player on the PGA Tour for that season. But instead, you got some guys that think they should still be able to be a part of it, even though they were told, and they signed an agreement at the start of the year, agreeing to the PGA Tour bylaws, and now they're going to challenge it. And, you know, from everything I've been hearing, you know, they could possibly – you know, get a stay like they did in Scotland and those guys were able to play. If that's the case, at least those three guys are going to show up in Memphis. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they are treated this week if they are allowed to play.
Colt, I'm having a hard time understanding this. Like, guys left because they said they wanted to play less golf and make more money. So why now, all of a sudden, do they want to come back to play more tournaments?
Well, see, that's where it's all ridiculous. Like, The reason they went to live was not to play less golf. It was for strictly money. Mm-hmm. And now they know that they have a deal over here with the PGA Tour where technically they qualified for the FedEx Cup playoffs. Like, they earned enough points, but since they broke the bylaws, they're not allowed to. And that's why I've had such a hard time with this thing of why these guys' excuses of why they left, when it's just not true. Like, just tell the truth. Like, you wanted more money. You saw a chance to make a ton of money, and you took it. You knew you weren't going to be allowed to play the PGA Tour anymore. They told you that, but for some reason, you still went. At the end of the day, like, they're golfers, right? They love playing golf, and they don't want to play once and then sit out 4 weeks, then play again, sit out another 4 weeks, like how it is over there on that tour. And right now, these guys are like, man, I'm bored. I want to play golf, and I can go out there and play against the best of the best and win a lot of money. I'm going to try everything I can to do that. I hope it doesn't happen.
Well, in terms of the FedEx Cup, we're chatting with Colt Knost. You got Scotty Scheffler currently sitting in the lead, Cam Smith right behind him, which, again, it sucks that we all know the rumors with Smith and, you know, mm-hmm. what maybe ends up happening if he ends up winning the FedEx and then the President's Cup and then pulls a shoot and goes to live, but who knows. But Scheffler, like, this is a chance for him to really cap off just a remarkable season. I mean, this guy's been on the radar for quite some time, you know, coming up as a kid, as a phenom, but this guy, if he can wrap it up, you know, this season he had, winning at Augusta, all of the, you know, number one player in the world, he wraps it up with a FedEx, you know, what kind of season, put it into perspective for us, what kind of season would he be completing over the next, you know, few weeks?
Well, it's definitely a historic season. It's definitely going to be the most lucrative season we've ever seen on the PGA Tour. I mean, he already broke the record for most money earned on the golf course, not including bonuses. But look, he made over $13 million on the golf course, I believe. He just made $5 million yesterday didn't even tee it up. He won $4 million for the Comcast, another $1 million for the Aon. I mean, look, he's got a 1,200-point lead. I know it's all staggering when we get to East Lake as far as the score goes and everything, but if he does, you're looking at a possibly $50 million season. I mean, it's just crazy to think the money this kid could make. And he's earned it, though. I mean, he's leading the FedEx Cup by 1,200 points. You get 500 points for a regular season win. So he's got almost 2.5 wins more than Cam Smith, who's had an incredible year.
It's been an unbelievable run. Enjoy the FedEx Cup. We'll do this again soon. Thank you for this, Colt.
You got it. Thanks for having me, guys.
There's Colt Knost of CBS and his podcast, Subpar Podcast. You know, he speaks from the heart in terms of he's a PGA guy, clearly. Yeah. He works with CBS, and he's, you know, he's covering these tournaments. Again, I'm still captivated by the idea of, like, a kid like Kim winning and what Norman would do. You know, like, is Norman calling him up and saying, all right, $200 million. You know, and if that's the case and you're 20 years old, it's almost like, what kind of a crossroads is that to have to deal with? But also the rumors, because they're out there, that Cam Smith is going, you know, that Matsuyama might be going. These are all rumors at this point. It's conjecture. But Cam Smith could win the FedEx, then go to the President's Cup and be like the face of the international team, and then a week later pull the chute and go to live. Like, that is, right. I think, there's a reasonable chance that happens.
Yeah. And look, there's also a reasonable chance that Liv's going to have some success with this lawsuit, as Colt Knost pointed out. Like, you know, we got this Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swafford, Matt Jones requesting a stay that would allow them to play in the FedEx Cup playoffs because they've qualified for the FedEx Cup playoffs, even though they did defect to the LIV Tour and break a PGA Tour bylaw. But that, you know, could be more salt in the wound for the PGA Tour and more reason why guys that I think when you talk to people who are involved in the golf industry, there's a feeling that at some point there's going to have to be a peace brokered here between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. They're going to have to find a way to coexist because this battle between the two of them in courtrooms and in, you know, talk shows like this, it's not productive for either.
No, it's not. Speaking of coexisting, there's a lot of debate and a lot of, I think, uncertainty whether or not Kevin Durant can coexist anymore with Steve Nash and Sean Marks, the head coach and the GM down in Brooklyn. Big report coming out earlier this afternoon about what Durant has reportedly demanded happens in Brooklyn in order for him to stay. We'll tell you about that. We'll get into it next. All right, so we're into almost the middle of August. Kevin Durant is still a Brooklyn Net. And I'm getting the impression that Kevin Durant is not overly excited about that reality. and he was over in London, England. He met with the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, and The Athletic is reporting, Shams Charania is reporting, that Durant put an ultimatum on the table. Said, you either deal me and you can keep Steve Nash, the head coach, Sean Marks, the GM, or if I'm going to stick around, those two have to go. That's the ultimatum. And I'm not buying that that's the truth at all from Kevin Durant. I think this is Durant just trying to push the trade forward. Mm-hmm. I think he's trying to make sure that it happens. I think he's probably getting frustrated that he's still in Brooklyn. We're a month away from camp, give or take, and he's uncertain of where his future is going. Because I find it hard to believe, you know, over a month later, after the trade request, all of a sudden you've decided the coach and the GM have to go.
Look, there was always an undercurrent to that, Hayes, but I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of Kevin Durant wants out of Brooklyn, and this particular tidbit of information that Shams Charania is putting forth puts Joseph Tsai, the billionaire owner of the Brooklyn Nets, in essentially an impossible position, mm-hmm. right? Because if you fire the GM and the coach and you kowtow to your best player, you know, you've lost any credibility as an owner in a lot of ways, right? You're letting the inmates run the proverbial asylum.
And he runs your show at that point.
Exactly.
He calls all the shots.
And if you don't, then Kevin Durant's saying you got to trade me. So in other words, you better trade Kevin Durant pronto, which for the rest of the league, I think ears around the league in terms of front offices have just perked up about, hey, maybe they'll start accepting some of those offers that we had on the table for months.
In a twisted way, it's kind of genius by Durant, because essentially what he's doing is making the situation as toxic as possible, and he'll get what he wants either way. Like either way, they're going to say, this guy's too toxic, we got to trade him, we got to accept a deal. Or are they going to say, okay, he's actually given us this ultimatum, we don't like any deals, so I guess we're going to get rid of the coach and GM, and we'll try and keep him happy, and maybe we can start fresh with him. I don't see that happening, though. I feel like this is just, they've got to accept a deal now, because that's too toxic of a situation to go back to.
Yeah, it's not, and no owner can fire their coach and GM because of a sit-down like this. You cannot do it. Like, as great as Durant is, and as much as Durant is the guy that can help you get to the promised land in terms of winning more so than the coach and the GM, it would be catastrophic. And furthermore, what you'd effectively be doing is you'd say, all right, well, who do you want me to hire as coach and GM then? He might as well make that decision, too.
Well, essentially for the second time, right? Because didn't Durant...
He already did it with Steve Nash.
Yeah, he picked Steve Nash.
Exactly. And that's why I have no respect for this play, because even though I do think it's a ploy to make it to embarrass the owner or put more pressure on the owner, for the owner to call up Marks and say, all right, just get rid of him. Like, make the deal. Find the best deal and stop holding on for every possible asset. Make the deal. I think that's the angle here. What he's doing is he's sewering people, and sewering Steve Nash in particular, which Nash was his guy. Nash put up with so much garbage this year in Brooklyn. I don't know if Steve Nash can coach. I have no idea if he can coach. But last year, he had to be a counselor as much as he had to be a coach.
Yep.
And, you know, Sean Marks, fine, whatever. That's the GM. Players and GMs barely have a relationship. Barely. But Steve Nash was your guy. You worked with him forever. You were friends. You brought him in. You were on the same page. You're going to throw him down the river? You're going to throw him... Yeah. You know, under the bus, that to me is ridiculous.
It's
amateur
incredible.
It's immature, and it's typical of Kevin Durant.
It's typical of Kevin Durant. Look, they did the same thing to Kenny Atkinson, who preceded, you know, Steve Nash as coach when Kevin Durant was getting paid, you know, $40-plus million to sit on the sidelines recovering from his torn Achilles tendon, and he was an armchair critic of that particular coach. But, look, there's two separate issues here. Can Steve Nash coach? Because Steve Nash got brutally outcoached in the opening round of the playoffs by Emi Udoka as the Boston Celtics swept the Brooklyn Nets. And you could tell Kevin Durant was not happy, and I did not blame him. That Nets offense was a stagnant mess. It was ISO heavy. It had no movement. It was bad coaching. There's no doubt about that. But this is a separate issue. This is about guys who don't want to be coached. We heard Kyrie Irving say it from the beginning of the 2020-2021 season when he had that quote on Durant's podcast about, I don't even think we need a head coach. KD could be the head coach. I could be the head coach. These guys don't want a coach. They want to be the coach. And guess what? That's not how it works in today's NBA.
Yeah, it's true.
Well,
man.
And you know what happens with this too now? Like, if you're a GM, like if you're Masai and you're looking at this, you're like, yeah, maybe I'm cooled off on trying to put together a good package for Durant too, because who's to say in a year or two he doesn't pull this garbage with me and I'm dealing with it. Like, it, maybe this can kind of just cool off the whole, oh, the Raptors need to make a big deal to get Kevin Durant, because I don't know why you want to bring this kind of nonsense into your environment that you've done such a good job of building over the years.
That was always going to be the gamble. It always will be the gamble.
And you saw it. You saw it a month. We talked about it a month ago, and here it is a month later.
Yeah. Like, nothing's changed in terms of who Durant is.
I'll tell you what. I'm not going to speak for these guys, but I'll tell you what I believe to know about these people. When I'm talking about Masai Ujiri and Nick Nurse, I would tell you that I think they believe they can handle Kevin Durant.
Right.
I would tell you I think they believe that they know how to avoid this type of a situation.
But Dave, what if Durant might just think, like, I'm bigger than these guys. I'm bigger than Nurse. I'm bigger than Masai. I'm Durant.
He didn't in Golden State. Right. No. Like he left as a free agent because he felt his legacy, he had to go chase something different. And how's that worked out for him? Kevin Durant is a classic example of a guy who, when he's got too much power, he doesn't know how to handle it. Right. Like his whole reputation is immaturity. It's burner accounts. It's losing interest. It's, you know, pouting and sulking and always being disappointed. What you need is a Nick Nurse type, a Masai type. Now, I don't know if, you know, Van Vliet, Siakam, like Scottie Barnes is a kid, man. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's not exactly Curry.
Steph, Clay, and Draymond. You
know, yeah, exactly.
Like, that is different.
Look, there's always risks, and you risk breaking the culture you've created in Raptorland, right? And they've created a great culture, you know, led by a guy like Fred Van Vliet, and, you know, you've got buy-in from all your young players. So it's a huge risk, but look, you know, without risk, you don't get the gain.
Right.
And I do think they would be willing to take that risk with the right deal. Because, look, we do know Kevin Durant has been very complimentary of Nick Nurse's coaching. We do know Nick Nurse can coach. We're not sure about Steve Nash. I think the quibble about Steve Nash's coaching can be seen as legitimate in some ways because he is an experienced coach.
I think you're probably right.
But So I just think, look, it's a possibility. But there are no sure things with Kevin Durant. I'll grant you that, Frankie.
No, for sure. We'll get more into this later this afternoon. Into the Bruins deals and what does it mean for, you know, the East and how the Bruins are going to move forward. The Jays back in action in Baltimore tonight. We'll start teeing that up in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.